Good evening. I'm NH1 political director Paul Steinhauser. Welcome to the third night of crucial debates in the Granite State Senate, gubernatorial and congressional elections. Tonight, the race for governor. Let's introduce our candidates. Democratic Governor Maggie Hassan was a lawyer in private practice before first being elected to the New Hampshire State Senate in 2004. She served three terms in the state Senate. She was elected governor in 2012. She's the second woman following Jean Shaheen to be elected governor. Hassan, 56, lives in Exeter. Republican nominee Walt Havenstein is a graduate of the U.S. Naval Academy and served a dozen years on active duty in the U.S. Marines. Havenstein was chief operating officer of Nashua-based BAE Systems, a defense contractor, and he served as CEO of Science Applications International Corporation, a technology and engineering company. Havenstein is 65 and lives in Alton. Each candidate will get 1 minute to respond to the questions asked of them, and their opponent will be allowed 30 seconds of rebuttal time. Joining me in asking those questions tonight are NH1 chief political correspondent Kevin Landrigan, NH1 anchor Kiki Wenzel, and Laura Kanoy, host of The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. I'd like to introduce one of our other media partners as well, and they are in tonight's debate. Those media partners are The Telegraph of Nashua, Foster's Daily Democrat, The Portsmouth Herald, The Laconia Daily Sun, and The Rudman Center at UNH School of Law. We begin tonight with a story that has been dominating the headlines for days here in New Hampshire. And an unusual request, let's turn our attention now to the video screens behind you. Dozens were hurt at the violence this Saturday near the Pumpkin Festival in Keene. Governor, this question is for you. Authorities say they were prepared for such an event, even purchasing a Bearcat to help control the riot situation. Yet it still happened. Should the trustees hold an investigation into how this happened? Will someone other than the protesters be held accountable? And what are you doing to make sure something like this does not happen again?
Well, thank you for the question, and thank you to New Hampshire One for hosting us, and to the panelists, and to you, Paul, for moderating, and for Mr. Havenstein to agreeing to this debate. Certainly what happened in Keene over the weekend was horrific and unacceptable, and we need to make sure that the people who are responsible are held accountable. While families and children were enjoying a pumpkin festival downtown, our law enforcement came together, local law enforcement as well as state police, to contain a very violent situation where rioters were throwing rocks and bottles and even pool balls. And there were a number of injuries. We're fortunate that there weren't more injuries. As we proceed forward, we need to hold the people responsible accountable. That includes not only any students at Keene State who might have been responsible or citizens from the area, but also people who came from other college campuses or from around the region. The investigation is ongoing, and I think it's going to be important to gather increased facts. Videos are being shared so we can hold more people accountable. I am concerned that there seems to have been a social media company that really invited a lot of people to a particular area in Keene that they didn't have permission to invite them to. And one of the things we need to do is understand the role that that company played and see if there's a way to hold them accountable as well, assuming that the facts show that they played indeed a role.
Yeah. Anybody at the college or any authorities should also be held accountable for what happened and for their preparedness.
Well, certainly there were good preparations in place. I think nobody anticipated the level to which social media drew this number of people. But certainly as we go through the investigation, we'll be asking those questions and determining whether the college had any responsibility for what happened. I'm very proud of the fact, though, that law enforcement contained the situation. We didn't have to bring out a Bearcat. Families and children were kept safe while they were enjoying the Pumpkin Festival. I think that's very important.
Thank you, Governor. Mr. Havenstein?
Yeah, I think it is a sad example of what can happen when people get out of control. And frankly, I was at the Pumpkin Festival when the events occurred. I would echo the fact that the local law enforcement did a great job in keeping the disturbance and essentially what was a riot away from those of us who were enjoying the festival there in Keene. And it's a very sad situation because it puts in jeopardy the future of that magnificent festival. I would say that absolutely those both responsible for the bad conduct must be held accountable. But those also in authority at the university must make sure that they do a lot of soul searching in terms of their responsibility We've seen situations where institutions like university have to reset standards, reset expectations. And the good thing is, in setting expectations for every year for the incoming freshmen, they have a chance to reset things in a very, very positive way.
Thank you both. Mr. Havenstein, this question is for you. The governor claims that you would seek to dismantle Medicaid expansion. What would this mean to the 20,000 people who are right now getting their coverage and the up to 50,000 who are eligible through this new benefit?
Yeah, my position is that I would have never signed this Medicaid expansion bill, primarily because the sunsetting of it puts in jeopardy and creates uncertainty for the people who are going on to the program right now. And we have, as I understand, about 20,000 citizens who signed up. But there's uncertainty as to what will happen when the program sunsets in 2017. We need a fix. It's not a question of going forward as it is. We have to fix it now so that those who are in most need, and I've always supported making sure that those in need have access to affordable health care. But if you have a program that is not funded out into the future, it creates a great deal of uncertainty to those folks. It's kind of like Lucy in the football with Charlie Brown. Is 2017 going to roll around and we're going to pull that benefit away? Or are we going to fix it now so there's certainty in the future and that the taxpayers know exactly what they're paying for in providing that benefit to other citizens of our state?
Governor?
Well, I'm very proud of the fact that the business community, Democrats and Republicans, came together to pass a bipartisan New Hampshire health protection plan that already is bringing the health and economic security that comes with health care coverage to 20,000 Granite Staters and will cover as many as 50,000. People should make no mistake. Mr. Havenstein has signed the Koch brothers' pledge, which states that he will do everything he can to block all elements of Obamacare, including Medicaid expansion. So he has said he would repeal it. We, meanwhile, have been working together to make a New Hampshire-specific plan that works for our citizens and make sure that our citizens are not only have the financial and health security that comes with coverage and access to primary and preventive care, but also that we have a productive and healthy workforce, good for our economy.
Mr. Havenstein, do you want to respond?
Yeah, that's simply not true. I have said since that bill was passed that my focus would be on fixing it. We shouldn't be taking a victory lap with the idea that we're bringing 50,000 more people onto a government program. We should be finding ways to help people make sure that they can rise above that. That's what the economic development plan that I put forward is all about, creating opportunities for people so they won't have to depend upon the government. We should be focused more on making sure people have opportunities not to be dependent upon government, not celebrating success by bringing people onto the government programs.
Thank you. Thank you both. Why don't we continue our conversation for that? Let's go to Laura.
Thanks, Paul. This question is for you, Mr. Havenstein. You've proposed reducing government spending by making government more efficient by 2.5%. Yes. You say this will bring in $90 million in revenue over the two-year budget cycle. Here's the question: what programs, positions, or services might be affected in order to achieve those savings?
Well, Laura, as you know, running big companies like BAE Systems, I set efficiency and effectiveness targets of 3 to 5% year after year after year, and we were able to meet those objectives and at the same time grow our business. To think that the state doesn't have 2.5% of efficiencies to be gained in our state government, I think most people would say is reasonable. And so what I'm looking for is the leadership within the state government to identify their areas that they think are most susceptible to effective efficiency gains. And frankly, because I've been able to do this year after year in the private sector, I can help them. I can teach them how to do that if they frankly don't know how today. But I believe most of our leaders in state government have ways of creating efficiency when it comes to their departments.
Governor.
Well, let's be clear that my opponent's Koch brother plan blows a $90 million hole in the budget before he even gets to these so-called efficiency targets. I'm very proud that we passed the most bipartisan budget without a sales or an income tax in over a decade in New Hampshire, and that we've been carefully managing that budget to a surplus. And my agency heads have actually carefully and responsibly managed fiscal year 14 budget to beat their efficiency targets. State government already has efficiency targets. It's called the LAPS. It's a 3.5% number, and we already beat that expectation over the last year. So what's really important for people to understand is that in addition to these so-called efficiency targets, my opponent would have a $90 million hole in the budget in addition to that, taking us right back to the Bill O'Brien years.
That's not true. The 2.5% efficiency goals that I've set are in order to accommodate the tax reductions on businesses that are so essential structurally. I would also suggest that the governor's inaccurate when she says she's met her 2014 budget. She didn't. She failed by at least $7.5 million in terms of the surplus that was expected. And as identified already, $40 million in overspending in Health and Human Services for 2015. So, frankly, my view of her fiscal responsibility, she has not earned a second term.
Governor, I think you want to respond?
Sure. We manage the budget to a surplus. All of the spending that we do has been approved by a bipartisan group of legislators, both senators and House members. We agree on those. We manage to a surplus. We beat our efficiency expectations to an extra $8 million. And moving forward, we're managing this fiscal year 15 budget carefully as we see the tax change from the O'Brien legislature, those impacts on our revenue lines see a trend downward. So we've already frozen out-of-state travel, frozen hiring, frozen purchasing, and we're going to carefully manage, and we will end fiscal year 15 with a balanced budget.
Thank you, Governor. Mr. Havenstein.
Again, this is not about revenue. Our revenue numbers for 2014 were right on target, and our revenue numbers for the first quarter of this fiscal year are right on target. The issue is spending. We are spending more than was budgeted. And frankly, we don't have the transparency you'd expect to see month to month from the departments. And the legislature has complained about it. They've been complaining about it since the spring. And frankly, to suggest that this is a bipartisan budget is frankly not true. The Senate Republicans created and passed this budget.
Thank you, Mr. Havenstein. A very short answer, Governor, then we're moving on.
Sure. The Republican-led Senate voted 24-0 for this budget. That's a bipartisan budget. And I will add that to the extent that the Republicans in the Senate are complaining about the budget, they are the one group that didn't meet their LAPS target by a large margin. I think they've been overspending. Thank you.
Thank you both. Let's switch gears here. And for that, let's go to Kevin.
Thank you, Paul. This question is for Governor Hassan. In less than 2 weeks, Massachusetts voters are going to be asked whether they still support the three casinos that are online to be licensed in the next year. If they agree to support them, how are you going to be able to make the case for one high-end facility here in New Hampshire being a reliable source of revenue for the state?
Thank you, Kevin, for the question. Since entering office, I've worked with members of both parties in the business community to set in motion our innovation plan. That plan has helped us pass a bipartisan balanced budget, freeze tuition at our university system, double the R&D tax credit, come together to pass a bipartisan plan to fix our roads and bridges, and our bipartisan Medicaid expansion plan. All important for the foundation for the 21st century economy. We know that there will continue to be needed investments, especially around issues like holding down college education. So I think it makes sense to capture the revenue that New Hampshire folks who go to casinos are spending and make sure that we're funding our priorities here in New Hampshire with one destination casino. The analysis shows that there is a market for that casino, even if Massachusetts goes forward with its casinos. What's important here is that I think most people in New Hampshire know that there are lots of their fellow citizens, if not themselves, who go to casinos, and their revenues will be funding Massachusetts roads and bridges and schools, or Connecticut's or Maine's. That doesn't make sense.
Mr. Havenstein?
Yeah, I oppose the casino gambling in our state. And the reason I oppose it, we're on the backside of that market. We look up and down the East Coast. We see New Jersey, Pennsylvania, and Delaware are now what was once cash cows, casinos, are now burdens on the state. And it doesn't seem to me that we need to be making those kind of investments on a market that's dying. Having said that, the real reason we're looking at a casino, and the governor is so supportive of it, because she wants the revenue. She wants to increase spending. And it frankly, it doesn't make any sense to be betting on a casino, because you're really gambling with the taxpayers' money. And so I don't support casino gambling. And frankly, when the economy is at 0.9% growth, that's the reason we're having issues with revenue. We got to get our economy moving. And frankly, the governor does not understand how to do that.
Well, certainly the casino industry generally is strengthening. You are seeing some casinos that haven't done well with the competition contract or fail, but you're seeing strengthening in other casinos. But what's really important here is that we be able to make critical investments, for instance, in holding the cost of higher education down, as we did with freezing tuition, and at our community colleges, it's 5% less. My opponent has said that he wouldn't give any more money ever,
Governor,
to our universities or higher education system, and that's a real issue for our middle class families.
Thank you.
I've never said that I wouldn't give money to our higher education system. That's, frankly, that's simply not true.
Thank you both. Let's move on. And for that, let's go to a question from Kiki.
Thanks a lot, Paul. Today we had a horrible tragedy in Canada, and our thoughts are certainly with the people there today. And this got us thinking about security, in particular school security. Last month, we had a lockdown at West High School in Manchester. A man walked into the school there with a duffel bag. In it, he had a pellet gun and a knife, and fortunately, it ended peacefully. No one was hurt. But my question tonight is, in your opinion, what is our state doing to make sure students are safe in the classroom? And is it enough?
Mr. Havenstein, let's begin with you.
Well, I think it is indeed unfortunate what we saw there in Manchester. I think the response by law enforcement and other officials was very, very good from my perspective. I do think we need to keep thinking about making sure if we're going to have security in schools, we need security in crime prevention in every dimension. One of the things that concerns me is the fact that Governor Hassan passed and sponsored SB 500, a bill that let violent criminals loose several years ago. And those violent criminals created a 12.5% spike in violent crime in our state. You can't be soft on criminals and then expect to create a secure environment in other parts of our society. It just won't work.
Governor?
Well, government's most important task is public safety. And so I'm very pleased that I have received the support of the New Hampshire State Troopers Association, the New Hampshire Police Association, and the professional firefighters of New Hampshire. In terms of school safety, in our bipartisan budget, we increase funding for school safety measures so that schools can have direct communication with police departments. And just recently in Londonderry, we see the development of our COPSYNC program, COPSYNC 911, that improves response time for public safety officials. As far as the legislation that my opponent is talking about, he knows that that was bipartisan legislation supported by law enforcement and that the crime statistics he talks about have been debunked.
Well, they haven't been debunked, frankly. That's simply not true.
Let us move on. And from calls to raise the state's gas tax to the heroin epidemic, we have lots more ground to cover in our NH1 debate. We will be right back. Welcome back to the NH1 debate in the race for governor of New Hampshire. I think it's fair to say if anybody's been watching television the last couple weeks, we've seen some very tough ads on both sides in this gubernatorial contest. Let's listen to one of them right now.
Bad management, fraud, wasteful spending, all on Walt Havenstein's watch. A failed CEO whose company overcharged taxpayers for a project meant to train our first responders. And on another taxpayer-funded project, Havenstein's company went $500 million over budget due to massive fraud. Governor Maggie Hassan, bipartisan leadership, balancing our budget with no sales or income tax, and doubling R&D tax credits for businesses. Maggie Hassan, building an innovation economy for our future. Paid for by Maggie Hassan.
Well, that ad brings us to our next question, and it's by Foster Daily Democrats editor, Paul Dieterle.
Governor Hassan, your campaign has repeatedly referred to your opponent as failed CEO Walt Havenstein. After looking at the allegation, the Associated Press wrote, "The facts, 5,000 jobs lost at Science Applications International Corporation and a drop in the company's value aren't wrong. But defense industry analysts and experts say the ads ignore key elements of the full story, such as the nationwide recession and cuts to the federal defense budget that had effects across the industry. Isn't it fair to say that the allegation of Mr. Havenstein being a failed CEO is either wrong or at least overstated by your campaign?"
Governor, let's start with you, and also Mr. Havenstein, I'm going to give you a chance as well to talk about this ad. Governor?
Well, my opponent has made his experience as a CEO really the cornerstone of the campaign. So then you need to look at what that experience is. And under his watch, his company, he implemented a strategy that he says was his strategy. His company lost thousands of jobs. The stock value plummeted 30%. The company had to split in two as he left. And then there were two major findings of fraud on the one hand and overcharging training for first responders. And that doesn't speak to good management. And in fact, he didn't take any action on either the fraud case or the overcharging case until it became public and there were charges filed.
Mr. Havenstein, it is a tough ad. It's running a lot right now. Your response?
Yeah, I'm glad this has come up. Fact is that after 10 years of extraordinary performance at BAE Systems when I retired, I was recruited by the board of directors at SAIC to come in and set a new strategy, reorganize the company, and make sure we were efficient and competitive going forth into what we all knew was going to be a very, very difficult period for our industry. That's exactly what I did. When I had finished that job, I retired. Certainly in the time I was there, I uncovered the situation in New York City that led to the discovery of fraud. I uncovered it, I fixed it, made sure the city of New York was made whole, held those responsible accountable, that include firing three of the senior executives at SAIC, and then we moved on. So the work we did at SAIC involved a lot of leadership, a lot of execution, and when I left SAIC, the chairman of the board praised me for my management acumen,
Mr. Havenstein,
and my leadership of the company.
Governor?
Well, in fact, as Mr. Havenstein got to SAIC, the City Time budget was supposed to be about $100 million. They were overspending that entire first year to the point where they ended up having to settle that case for $500 million, and he took no action until after prosecutors filed charges. So that doesn't speak to good management. In fact, what he did to SAIC is not something we want him to do to the state of New Hampshire, and he's already talking about blowing a $90 million hole in our budget and taking us right back to the Bill O'Brien years, a person he praises,
Governor,
and a budget that he praised.
Mr. Havenstein?
Again, it was all about leadership. It was all about facing into problems. Frankly, problems that needed solving, and I solved them. Now, in contrast, the governor is facing problems when it comes to unfunded pension liability and others that she's not willing to face into, not take aggressive action. And frankly, as a result, in my opinion, she has not earned a second term.
You know, let me keep the conversation going here, and I want to play another ad because it's not only the governor's campaign that has some tough ads out there. There's some coming from the Havenstein campaign as well. Let's take a listen.
Some second terms are a mistake. Maggie Hassan's first term, expanding Obamacare in New Hampshire and exploding the state budget. Now her administration is asking for $2 billion more. Hassan has supported over 100 tax and fee increases. Now this reckless spending will lead her to only one choice: support an income tax again. Hassan may have no choice, but you do. She hasn't earned a second term. Vote against an income tax. Vote against Maggie Hassan. Paid for by Havenstein for Governor.
Governor, I think you want to respond to that. And also, how do you avoid a second-term slump?
Oh, my goodness. So first of all, I oppose an income or sales tax. I would veto one if it came to my desk, and I've been very clear about that. We are in the process of developing our budget for the next biennium, as every governor does in the fall, leading into the next two-year budget cycle. And that ad is incredibly misleading. The law requires agency heads to submit certain data about how much certain things would cost if we were to do them all. I've already told them it's a non-starter, those numbers, that they need to come up with much more realistic proposals, because we do know we need to balance a budget. Unlike Mr. Havenstein, who worked in SAIC, where they just kept increasing spending on budgets, we know that we have to live within our means and balance our budget. We do it without an income or sales tax, and we'll continue to do that, as I've shown we can. Last thing I would say is that the budget that Mr. Havenstein has attacked is a budget that passed unanimously in the Republican-led Senate. It passed almost unanimously in a Democratic-led House. We did it the New Hampshire way. We came together. We found a way forward and compromised. And it's a budget that is invested in priorities that have set the foundation for 21st century economic growth.
Mr. Havenstein.
Well, the fact of the matter is our budget, albeit eventually signed by this governor, was attacked by this governor. It was attacked, and there was not cooperation when it came to across the aisle communication. And maybe that's why the Senate Finance Chair, Senator Jeanne Foster, characterized Governor Hassan's leadership as toxic partisanship. Toxic partisanship that's poisoning Concord. Now, that's not me talking. That's someone that the governor is supposed to be working with talking. And I got to tell you, if that's the style of leadership that is expected to create solutions for the state, frankly, the governor has not earned a second term.
I think if Mr. Havenstein understood the way democracy works better, New Hampshire state government works better, he might understand the notion of compromise. I criticized certain aspects of the Republican budget as it first came out of the Senate, as they had criticized mine. But the thing about working together and in bipartisanship is not that you agree on everything. It's the fact that you're able to debate, air your disagreements, and then move forward and still solve the problem. That's what we did with the budget. What's really toxic is the budget that Walt Havenstein's $90 million hole would leave us, and the level of partisanship that Bill O'Brien, somebody he's praised, exercised.
Mr. Havenstein, a quick response, and let's move on.
It's not a question of working together. It's a question that the people she supposedly is supposed to be working together criticize her leadership. Toxic partisanship. Toxic partisanship. If I said toxic partisanship as many times as the governor says bipartisanship, maybe people figure this out. She's not the leader for the future of New Hampshire.
Thank you both. Let's shift gears now. Let's move to a different topic. And for that, let's go back to Kevin.
Thank you, Paul. This is a question for both of you. Let's start with Governor Hassan. As you know, heroin addiction is a growing and substantial problem in New Hampshire. We're among the top five states in the country in terms of heroin deaths, and one of the lowest five states in terms of access to treatment per capita. Would you spend more money and resources to expand substance abuse treatment in this state?
Governor?
Well, thank you for the question, Kevin. Certainly, heroin and prescription drug use is a serious issue in our state, a serious public safety and health issue. And it's one of the reasons that our bipartisan Medicaid expansion agreement was so important. This is an agreement that is funded by the federal government. $2.5 billion federal dollars come into our state over the next 7 years, and it includes substance abuse and mental health treatment, critical to being able to get treatment to those in need. In addition to the Medicaid expansion plan, an expansion plan that my opponent would repeal, we passed, or actually just launched, our prescription drug monitoring program, which allows us to control prescriptions, allows healthcare providers to determine whether a patient presenting to them is seeking drugs or doctor shopping. We also have worked with the other five of the other New England governors, four of the other New England governors, to make sure that we're working across state lines to address this particularly challenging problem. And we also made sure that more of our first responders have the use of Narcan so that they can pull somebody out of an overdose, saving lives. But in the long term, this is about access to treatment, which expansion will allow us to do.
Thank you. Mr. Havenstein.
Well, it is about access to treatment. The problem with the Medicaid expansion bill that the governor signed is it terminates in less than 2.5 years. It truncates. And those people that we've made these commitments to are in jeopardy. I have never proposed or suggested that we repeal our Medicaid expansion law. What I propose is fixing it in a responsible way that we can fulfill our commitments to those that we're making today for the future. The governor won't take that up. She'll wait until it kicks that can right down the road until January of 2017, putting those people in jeopardy. With regard to heroin and substance abuse, it is encouraging, finally, that the bill that Jeb Bradley originally sponsored and promoted and that John Lynch signed with regard to making sure we understand where people are getting prescription drugs, which is usually the cause of long-term drug abuse is being properly dealt with.
I don't think we want to go back to the conversation on Medicaid again, but a very short response.
The reason the Medicaid expansion bill has a sunset on it is because the Republicans in the state Senate insisted on it. And Mr. Havenstein has signed a pledge to the out-of-state Koch brothers to repeal Medicaid expansion, and he should live up to the terms of what he signed.
Mr. Havenstein, a very short response.
Yeah. Again, I have never suggested that we repeal Medicaid expansion law. The only two pledges, the most important pledges to me, are the Pledge of Allegiance and the pledge never to spend money, right, that the state doesn't have. And frankly, that's a pledge, which I call 2.0, that the governor can't sign because she's spending money that we don't have.
Thank you both very much. And I pledge to move us on to a different topic now. And for that, let's go to Kiki.
Thanks a lot there, Paul. This is a question for both of the candidates tonight. Two parts to this question. Governor Hassan, two-thirds of the money raised by increasing the gas tax has gone toward expansion of I-93. Where will the money come from to repair the many red-listed bridges and substandard state roadways? And Mr. Havenstein, you oppose the increase in the gas tax, so how would you pay for the expansion of I-93 and the other infrastructure needs of the state?
Let's start with Mr. Havenstein on this question.
Sure. I do oppose the gas tax when it was passed, and there's a simple reason why. It's the wrong time for another tax on the people of New Hampshire. And it's not just a gas tax. Remember, it's a diesel tax. Every bit of commerce that comes through our state is riding on that tax. And for example, a forester up in the North Country, that's an $800 a year tax on every single one of their trucks. So it hits every single pocketbook in our state. And at a time we're trying to grow the economy from 0.9%, dead last in New England, behind Vermont and Rhode Island, for heaven's sakes, the last thing we need is another tax. Now, I propose that we'll need some structural changes, but the money that comes from our taxes should be spent on our roads and bridges and not diverted to other needs.
Governor.
Well, I'm proud of the fact that we came together, both members of both political parties and the business community, like the Business and Industry Association, the Nashua Chamber of Commerce, many other chambers of commerce, to come together to find a way to fund a modern and solid transportation infrastructure for our commuters, our businesses, tourists. We know to have an innovation economy, we need to have solid infrastructure. And we have used the funds that we are raising on fixing roads and bridges. In fact, the Executive Council just approved contracts this summer so that roads and bridges are being fixed as we speak. We're going to need to continue to work with our federal partners to make sure that we continue to get the kind of investment in transportation infrastructure that we need moving forward. But it's really important for people to understand that my opponent would repeal this transportation funding plan, a bipartisan compromise that came together members of both parties and the business community. And that would be a mistake. It would take us backwards economically.
Mr. Adams, I had a very short response. Yeah, I want to move on.
I haven't proposed repealing it. What I've proposed is supporting Senator Jeb Bradley's proposal to make structural changes so that the money we are raising for roads and bridges is spent for roads and bridges.
Thank you both.
I do have to say that if the plan that Mr. Havenstein is talking about in terms of changing the structure, that proposal could take as many as 80% of our state troopers off the road. The funding is supposed to go to roads and bridges and safety thereon.
Mr. Havenstein, 10 seconds if you want.
And I never suggested for a second. 80%? Seriously? That's just outlandish. I've never proposed that. I've been fully supportive of our state troopers. You know something? The law enforcement officers in this state wear body armor from BAE Systems. And I'm very, very proud of the support that I've given to the law enforcement across our country, but right here in New Hampshire. Over 1,900 lives have been saved by the products and systems that BAE Systems has provided to our law enforcement. And I'm very, very proud of that.
And the law enforcement members of our state have endorsed me because they know I've stood up for them and actually funded the resources they need.
Thank you both very much. Let's move on to a different topic. And for that, let's go to Laura.
Thanks, Paul. This next question is for both of you. New Hampshire has said to have some demographic challenges. We're one of the nation's oldest states. By 2020, one in five Granite Staters will be over age 65. This is said to slow down our economy while requiring more social service spending at the same time. Here's the question. What should the next governor do to tackle these trends?
Governor, let's begin with you this time.
One of the critical challenges we have moving forward to develop the strengthening, innovative 21st century economy is to make sure we have a 21st century workforce. This is something I hear about from businesses around the state. And so it's really important that we keep young people here. That's why we have focused so much on affordability and higher education. And it's why we need to do things like carefully examine rail coming up into the state that attracts young people, attracts a workforce as well. As we strengthen that workforce and we bring more young people in here, it's also very important that we address the particular challenges that come when your population ages. And one of the things we've been able to do over the last 2 years is really begin to put together plans for how we're going to address growing older population. But what's really important is if we're going to expand middle-class opportunity, help innovative businesses create jobs, keep our economy moving, and keeping the high quality of life that's been praised and recognized as number one in the country, we need to get young people here, and that means really focusing on higher ed affordability, something that my opponent's plan wouldn't let us do.
Mr. Havenstein.
Well, the key to keeping our young people here is to create job opportunities for them. And frankly, the governor does not know how to do that. I have proposed a plan to create 25,000 high-tech, high-paying jobs in the first 2.5 years of my administration. That plan includes tax restructuring, which is so critical. We will not be competitive unless we do it. It includes changes in regulations to make us a much more business-friendly state. It includes an education system that's aligned to the future business needs and employment needs of our state, an energy policy that drives energy rates down so that once again we can be competitive, and frankly, an infrastructure system that we can afford that will support that, as well as healthcare costs that are competitive when it comes to the other states that we compete with. We're not going to create opportunities for young people without fundamental structural changes, and frankly, those changes are things that the governor is not interested or able to do.
Thank you both very much. We're going to have plenty more in our debate right in a minute. Please stick with us. The NH1 debate continues in one moment. Welcome back to the NH1 debate in the race for governor of New Hampshire. And I want to go to a question from former Chief Justice John Broderick. He is the executive director of the Rudman Center at the UNH School of Law. Here is his question.
As both of you know, in the 1980s, New Hampshire had the best mental health treatment network, I think, in the United States. In the last two decades, that's deteriorated. What I'd like to know is what specifically you would do to repair it, what you think it would cost, and where the funds would come from. Thank you.
Good question for both of you, but let's start with Mr. Havenstein.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point, and I appreciate Judd Broderick participating in asking that question. We do have to repair our mental health system. Frankly, we see more and more recidivism in our jails as a result of not dealing effectively with the mental health situation. We see increased crime as a result of not dealing with it. We see increased drug abuse because we haven't been dealing with it. And so we're going to have to set priorities within our budget to make sure that we are continuing to make that a priority, and that would be one of the priorities for my administration.
Thank you. Governor.
addressing mental health challenges is one of our most important responsibilities. It's important to public health and public safety. I've heard on the campaign trail before I became governor and since I became governor how important it is to our businesses and our families that we address it. And that's why we passed our Medicaid expansion plan, one of the reasons, because it has coverage for mental health treatment, critical to being able to have enough resources for community-based health care. In our bipartisan budget, passed with members of both parties in both chambers almost unanimously, we reinvested in community-based mental health. And then because we demonstrated our commitment to doing that, we were able to enter a landmark settlement with litigants around a lawsuit around the lack of community-based mental health care. And so we settled that, and we are implementing the plan that comes from that settlement, standing up community-based care, which will alleviate the acute situation we have in some of our hospital emergency rooms with people in crisis waiting for care. My opponent's plan would pull us right back. That $90 million cut would jeopardize that funding.
A short response, sir?
I don't know what the definition of short is, since 30 seconds seems to mean 2 minutes for the governor. So I'll try and be brief about this. A Medicaid expansion bill that's going to sunset in a little over 2 years, that is not a solution long-term for the people that deserve it, has to be fixed. It has to be fixed. And I intend to make that my highest priority when I get into office.
And again, if Mr. Havenstein actually understood how this works, he would know that every 2 years, legislatures come to Concord, and every piece of legislation has a chance of being sunsetted or renewed. And we'll work to renew it and support it and move forward. Thank you.
I'm going to give you the final word, Mr. Havenstein.
To suggest I don't understand that is also disingenuous. I've managed a budget that's 3 times the size of the state of New Hampshire, and I managed it year in and year out. So I know the choices that have to be made, and I know the programs that have to be extended. But this bill, which has a sunset provision in it, has no provision for funding future growth in that program.
Thank you both very much. Let's move to a different topic now, and for that, let's go to Laura.
Thanks, Paul. While many Granite Staters are enjoying lower prices for gas and oil suddenly, many of them will also face record high prices for electricity and natural gas this winter. Meanwhile, alternative sources of energy, from the Northern Pass hydropower project to wind farms, have had a hard time getting off the ground. What's the governor's role in broadening New Hampshire's energy portfolio? Please name 2 specific action steps that you would take.
Governor, we'll begin with you.
High energy costs have been a long-standing challenge in New England and New Hampshire. And since entering office, I've really brought focus to that challenge. And so we've released the first energy strategy in over a decade in New Hampshire, an energy strategy that focuses on expanding natural gas supply, increasing energy efficiency and conservation, making sure that we find ways, private-public partnerships, to finance small-scale clean energy, and making sure we move to a more reliable and flexible grid. In particular, we entered an agreement with the other New England governors to bring focus onto the particular challenge of bringing more natural gas capacity to this region, because our price spikes right now are in fact related to that. And I'm very glad that we now see the private sector coming in with 2 specific proposals to do that. Thank you.
Mr. Havenstein.
Well, the 10-year strategy the governor's referring to makes no mention of the cleanest and cheapest renewable energy, and that's hydroelectricity, all right? And we need to find a way, a New Hampshire way, a balanced way, to bring hydroelectricity into the state, right? Yes, it goes to the grid, but we need to find a way to make that work for New Hampshire. Today, we have a Northern Pass alternative, frankly, that doesn't work for New Hampshire. My goal is not just to answer yes or no on Northern Pass, but how to make it work for New Hampshire. And frankly, that's a role of leadership that's been sadly missing in the corner office. And frankly, when you look out over the long term, the reason we're having problems today is because governors in the past didn't face into these problems, just like the current governor is not facing into these problems. And for that reason, she hasn't earned a second term.
My opponent just adopted my position on Northern Pass, so it's good to see that he agrees with me. We know we have to move forward and we can find a win-win solution in that and other siting challenges because it's important we have a diversity of sources.
Thank you both. Let's go to Kevin now for another question.
Yes, my question is for Mr. Havenstein. You've vowed to create 25,000 private sector jobs and to cut taxes. Now, as you know, most startups, even if they're successful, struggle to make any money at all. So wouldn't it make more sense for you to cut the state's tax on payroll and sales, known as the business enterprise tax, than, as you propose, to cut the corporate profits tax that most large businesses benefit from?
Well, that's a good question, Kevin. But when I look broadly across the economic development strategy for our state, it made more sense to me to make sure that our tax structure in the form of the business profits tax was competitive with the other states in the region. And that's what my plan does. It drops over two cycles from an 8.5, the highest in the region, frankly, the third highest in the country, to make us more competitive, to 7.4%. Right? At the same time, we need to make sure that our regulations and rules that are imposed, not just on large business, but primarily on our small businesses, are changed to make them much more likely to start here and grow here. It's important to understand, under the last decade of Democratic leadership in the corner office, we have fallen from 14th in the country when it comes to new business startups, the seed corn for future economic growth for our state and job creation, to 35th. There are some fundamental structural issues with regard to our taxes that have to change.
Governor.
We have one of the lowest overall tax burdens in the country, and we are consistently rated one of the best places to do business. Most recently, we were rated the best place to earn a living in the country. Our unemployment rate is at its lowest since 2008. We're creating thousands of the private sector is creating thousands of jobs. But we know some families are still struggling, and we have more work to do. And that's where the innovation
Governor.
Strategy that we have comes into play.
Thank you both.
I have a comment, Derek.
Mr. Havenstein.
The fact of the matter is we've lost 1,500 high-paying, high-tech jobs in our state in the last 22 months under Governor Hassan's leadership. I created 1,500 high-tech, high-paying jobs in the 4 years I was running BA Systems in Nashville. Those jobs are still here. Those are still here. We know how to do this. We just have to have a leader who knows how to do it and can implement it.
Governor, very short response.
The private sector has created thousands of jobs since I've been in office, but the important thing is to keep investing in the elements of a 21st century economy, the elements that are in our innovation plan, elements that you couldn't invest in if my
governor.
Opponent becomes governor and blows a $90 million hole in the budget.
Of course we need to make investments in our future, but if we're not creating the opportunities aligned with that, it doesn't make any difference. 106,000 of our citizens leave the state every day commuting to work. Just imagine if those jobs were right here in New Hampshire. That's what I want to create. I want to create the environment where those jobs can be here in New Hampshire.
You know, a lot of people move up here because they enjoy our quality of life and they know what a great state it is. I'm not going to tell them they have to give up their jobs in Massachusetts right away to come live in New Hampshire.
Governor,
they don't have any place to work in New Hampshire. That's the reason so many of our young people are leaving, just like my son had to leave 15 months ago to find an opportunity commensurate with his skill.
There are many large companies with lots of job openings in the high-tech engineering, and one of the reasons that we're focused so much on college affordability and 21st century education alignment is because those companies are saying that they can't find people for those jobs. There are openings here. Just went to a great opening at Comcast last week. And again, we know we have more work to do because there are families who are still struggling.
Thank you both. Thank you both. That was a spirited discussion. And we have just a few moments left, so I want to change things up and go a little lighter now and ask you both a couple questions and maybe we'll tell us something about you. And let's start first with, what is your favorite website for news? And let me start with you, Governor.
Oh, I guess the Nashua Telegraph would be the place I often go first.
Okay. Mr. Havenstein.
Union Leader. Every day, first thing that pops up on my iPad around about 4 o'clock every morning.
Got you. And here's another question, a little off topic, but what was the last concert you attended and I'll start with you this time, Mr. Havenstein.
Zach Brown up at up on the lake about 14 months ago was great. Big country and western fan. Zach Brown is a favorite of Judy and mine.
Governor?
It has been a long time since I've attended a concert, but I was able to attend one for Bonnie Raitt and James Taylor a long time ago, and I enjoyed them very much.
Well, thank you both. We have about 2 minutes left, and what I want to do right now is get each of you a minute for a closing comment. Mr. Havenstein, let's start with you.
Well, first of all, thank you very, very much to NH1 for this opportunity and for our panelists and our other sponsors. This has been a great opportunity for me to show the contrast in leadership between the 41 years of experience that I bring to this race and will bring to the corner office, responsible leadership, and as opposed to my opponent, frankly, whose leadership has been characterized by the people she's supposed to be working with as toxic partisanship. I've worked in industry and in the Marine Corps with over 100,000 colleagues, and never, ever has anyone, who even those who disagree with me, has ever referred to my leadership style as toxic.
Governor, a very short parting comment.
Well, this election is indeed about a choice. We can continue to move forward, building on the bipartisan efforts to solve longstanding New Hampshire challenges in the New Hampshire way, or we can allow my opponent to take us back to the slash-and-burn Koch brother Bill O'Brien agenda that devastated our families, our businesses, and our economy just 2 years ago. We have an innovation plan we need to continue to build on, and I ask for your vote. I hope very much that the people of New Hampshire will keep
Governor.
Committed to doing things the New Hampshire way together.
Governor Hassan, Mr. Havenstein, thank you both very much for joining us. Tomorrow night, the U.S. Senate candidates, Senator Jeanne Shaheen and Republican challenger Scott Brown will discuss issues as NH1 teams up with CNN. The debate will be live right here on WBIN from the studios of NH1 here in Concord, simulcast on New Hampshire Public Radio from 7 to 8 p.m. Thank you again for joining us tonight.